Good morning, everyone. I'm a little bit nervous. Thank you. This is my first sermon ever, so I hope you enjoy it. And I thank those people that have come along to support me. I've got a few friends here in the congregation today and some of my family, so I'm really grateful for that. Evie stayed in, but the boys decided that ice cream Sunday was far more enticing than listening to me, so they high-fived me on the way and out they went. Anyway, so I was a bit nervous about preaching this morning because I've never done it before, but God in his wisdom placed it upon my heart to do so. After the many times I'd said, no, I can't do it, I probably left David hanging a little bit too long with my yes or no, but then I decided that it was actually really important for me to do this. It was important for me to follow through because I believe in the role of women in the church. I believe that Jesus had a heart for women and that we are all made in God's image. I've spent the last 20 years teaching children, which makes me feel much older than I really like to think about. It's a profession dominated by women, with the intake of males getting smaller and smaller each year. Research indicates that within 50 years, males will be extinct within the teaching profession. The various reasons include low pay rates and the pressure to conform to masculine ideals. That's according to a 2017 Macquarie University study. The study also states that a student's academic results are not at all impacted by the teacher's gender. If only that study had been around in Jesus's time. When I was choosing a university to attend, I was desperate to go to ACU, which is Australian Catholic University. I myself had completed a Catholic education, which is a whole other story for a Brethren turned Baptist family, and I really liked what it offered. Thankfully, God placed me there. Although my faith at the time had slipped a little, I knew that it was going to be okay, that I knew about God and I could talk about Jesus. I knew that we were going to be studying the Bible. And I have to say that my knowledge at times sometimes caught me in hot water because I wasn't afraid to argue with the lecturers about what had gone on in the Bible. I'll never forget one lecturer. She was a beautiful nun. And she told us that teaching was a calling from God. A calling from God. Not just a career path that I would take, but an actual calling from God. That God had planned this for me, and it was something that I was to do for him. It seemed that God didn't mind that I was a woman who would be teaching small people of the world the stories about the Bible, the history, the facts, the life of Jesus. It's quite ironic that in Jesus' time, women were not seen as teachers, or even valued for anything other than motherhood. Yet here we are 2,000 years later with the teaching profession dominated by women. We heard in the reading earlier the story of Mary and Martha. This story is so short and yet so powerful on many levels. Jesus and his disciples had been travelling and were seeking rest when they were welcomed into their home by Martha. He sat down, probably had a good chat about the weather and what he'd been up to, and Mary just plonked herself down at his feet. Martha was busy preparing a meal. She was preparing for a lot of people, so she was probably a little bit frantic. And she became really agitated by her sister. In a familiar and comfortable way, yet seemingly annoyed, she went to Jesus and she said, "Jesus, don't you care that I'm doing all the work and Mary's just sitting down there?" And Jesus replied to her, and we had a giggle about this at our small group on Monday night about how it might have sounded. We loved that he said it, said her name twice. "Martha, Martha, you are worried and troubled about many things, but one thing is needed. Mary has chosen what is better. One thing is needed." Mary had chosen the better thing. The better thing was learning from Jesus. The better thing was choosing Jesus. In a time when women were disregarded, had no power or authority, were merely mothers and homemakers, Jesus had allowed her to sit, to listen, to to learn. The good part that will never be taken away from her. It may have seemed that Mary was a bit lazy getting Martha to do all her work, but she knew that the good part was her choice to listen, to learn, to follow Jesus, her choice for a better life. I had a friend say to me recently that I am so calm and at peace with myself and my life, and I did chuckle because she obviously hasn't seen me in the mornings getting the kids ready for school. And she went on to say how lucky I am to have my faith. I explained to her that she too can experience this. There's no flash from God saying I'm worthy. There's no news story about how my heart has softened. There's no reason to not let Jesus in. The peace I experience is not because I'm more organized than her, or it's not because I'm better at things than my friend. It is because I have chosen to let Jesus into my life. I have chosen to be a believer, and I'm not ashamed of that. I don't have it all together, but what I do have is the knowledge that there is a greater purpose in my life, and the comfort that that brings is amazing. A couple of years ago, I was questioning a few things. It was after I'd had the kids, and I was sitting with my friend Katrina over a cup of tea. She's a minister, so I take her words of wisdom seriously because they are always steeped in the truth of God. But she's also real and honest with her thoughts. I was having a moment, which lasted quite some time, where I wasn't sure where I was doing enough with my life. I felt that I probably wasn't doing what I should be. I felt like I hadn't achieved all the things that I had been supposed to achieve. I felt like somehow I should have been bigger, more shiny, sparkly, I don't know. Should I have been famous? Should I have started a charity? Should I have worked in Africa? Katrina gave me no answers, but gently drew out from me what I most valued in my life. And those things were my family, my friendships, my teaching, my beliefs, and cups of tea. When I looked at that further, I was actually doing all of those things. I was giving time to my husband and three children by working part-time rather than full-time. I was providing a haven for friends who needed it by listening and supporting. I was inviting many people into my home to share meals and cups of tea. I was expressing my faith through friendship. I was exactly where God had placed me and for exactly his purposes. It's no coincidence that Jesus, after his life and work of ministry and service, appeared to Mary. We read in the four Gospels that these women were the first to see Jesus: Mary Magdalene, Mary the mother of James, and Salome. The women had gone to the tomb to anoint Jesus' body, as was the tradition, very early one morning. And on the way there, they were questioning who's going to roll away the stone. To their surprise, when they arrived, the stone was moved and the entrance to the tomb was open. As they were close to Jesus, I can imagine how annoyed they became, thinking that someone had got there before them and done their job. But when they entered, there was a man or two men sitting there in white robes, and they weren't sure who he was. He told them not to be alarmed, that Jesus of Nazarene, who was crucified, was risen. Go and tell the news. In John 20, Mary mistakes Jesus for a gardener until he calls her name. He tells her not to hold on to him, but to tell that he is going to my God and your God. Not one God for the rich and one God for the poor. Not one God for the black and one God for the white. Not one God for the men and one God for the women. But my God and your God, with no distinction, no boundaries. And yet it is still very significant that the first person to see Jesus after his resurrection was a woman. Women had a very specific and significant role to play in the traditions around mourning. It is believed that women were often noisy during mourning, throwing dirt into their hair and wailing loudly. Often professional mourners were hired to create the appropriate atmosphere during the days between death and burial. The embalming with spices of a body was to eliminate odour in the tomb. Jesus had already been there for a bit, so I imagine that Mary and her friends thought that he probably didn't smell too good. The fact that they were taking these spices shows that they were not actually expecting Jesus to rise, literally, from the dead, or they simply wouldn't have bothered. One article I read talked about how the spices were taken by the women to Jesus, how they were indeed unused, but these women were rewarded with the honour of being the first eyewitnesses of the resurrected Lord. A woman in Jesus' time had no rights. She was expected to mourn appropriately, but she was confined to domestic duties. Men often did not speak or acknowledge a woman. A woman could not go to school and had to sit apart from men. A woman could not worship if she had her period. A woman was expected to obey with no voice and often married at about 12 years of age. So why then would Jesus, the Saviour of the world, present to a woman after his resurrection? Because Jesus changed the game. Mary had been a follower of Jesus. He cured her from illness and she learnt from him and she followed him. She was present at his crucifixion and she was faithful to the end. Jesus valued her. Jesus validated her as a person and as a woman. It signifies that women, even in the time of Jesus, were capable of being equally as important, equally as Christian, equally made in the image of Christ. I can't imagine the greatest story ever told, the backbone of our faith, that God allowed his son to appear just to some randoms after his death. This is a very specific and deliberate part of the Christian story. Jesus was the turning point for women. His acceptance and acknowledgement is great and should not be denied. It would not have been written this way just for the sake of it. The distinction between Old and New Testaments is Jesus. Jesus came, Jesus changed the world for all people. His acceptance, healing, and loving of a society of the society's most vulnerable is what we all should strive for. Unfortunately, and so tragically, in many aspects, women still have no voice. Women are constantly bombarded with images of how we should look, what size we should be, how we should act around men. Women still get paid on average for the same job in Australia 15.3% less than men. It is estimated that in 2018, 210,000 women in Australia will experience domestic violence at the hand of an intimate partner. On average, one woman is killed every week at the hands of their partner. The West African cocoa industry uses 2 million child labourers, and children as young as 8 are being trafficked for the purposes of us enjoying chocolate. 40 million people, more than ever in history, are enslaved, with a huge percentage of them being women and children. Jesus changed the way women were perceived. Why then is the world so far behind and struggling to catch up with the good news of Jesus? The one thing he talked to Martha about. The one thing. There's no denying that there are differences between men and women. It starts biologically. Well, men just go downhill from there. The way I'm wired, and this is not true for everyone, this is not true for every single woman, but the way I'm wired for me is to attend to relationships. The relationships with my parents and siblings, as a wife, as a mother, as a teacher, as a friend. I prioritise relationships above all. Above all the washing and the perfect house, It's a bit unfortunate, but that's how it goes. Above the career and the ideal self, I will drop everything to attend to a relationship. Matt often comments on our halfway house and the counselling bench where I drink those copious amounts of tea. I do this because this is my gifting from God. This is who I am, made in the image of my Creator. Whilst the society in which we live constantly pressures us to look better, work harder, earn more money, have a bigger house, the best brand clothes, compete with each other, men and women, I choose relationships. I attend to them, I nurture them. Not always perfectly, but this is how I am trying to live out my obedience to God through my calling as a woman. I am fortunate I can do this because Jesus came to the world and gave me this opportunity. I encourage you to pray and seek the peace your heart desires. I encourage you to recognize that when Jesus changed the game, he did it for everyone, men, women, and children, all equally important, all with equal validity in the church, all made in the image of Christ. I encourage you today to find your calling from God. It might well be as simple as mine, just being who I am, where I am.